in. Podzilla 1985 Sports and your Podzilla 1985 Network. I am Cody Sandusky. Thank you for joining us today. It is Saturday, May 21st, 2016. It's a beautiful day here in historic downtown Cape Girardeau, down the road from Gaming Grounds at 709 Broadway and Cape for all your gaming needs. They have special orders, pre-orders, and retro games for any genre that you like to dabble into. Plug out of the way early. Just figured I'd want to sprinkle that into the introduction. It's always fun to do that. Today's going to be an abbreviated episode of PZ85 Sports. About 30 minutes is where we're going to ring in. Full disclosure to you out there, you know, we have a good relationship as listener and content creator. Thank you, by the way, for joining in. Part of it is I was invited to the Cardinal game today. Cardinals facing the Arizona Diamondbacks, 3:15 start time. So I have to minimize some recording time to maximize some travel time. So in part for that, and also in part, I'd like to experiment. You know, it's the beauty of the podcasting medium. You kind of get to play around with variables, see what works better, see what doesn't work as well, and kind of tinker with a few things. So we're going to dabble into that today. And for another part, a lot of what's gone on this week has been just statistical, you know, gameplay related. And here at PZ85 Sports, maybe not initially by design, but some of what we've done has become more of a conscientious discussion of sports, if you will. I'm not saying I'm some great prognosticator. I'm not a great, you know, intelligent mind in terms of breaking down, the in-depth topics of sports. But we've fallen into some of that in terms of just discussing, whether it be in the last few weeks, entitlement of athletic players and, you know, young kids that come up and aren't told any different because of that. You know, coaching changes, conspiracy, sexual assault in the college ranks of sports. We've hit some pretty heavy things in our brief time here at PZ85 Sports. I say brief, it's been at least since the Super Bowl, so we're already 3 months into this thing, and very thankful that you guys have been listening in as a part of this journey. But this week has a little bit less of that. You know, we'll hit a couple kooky stories, I guess you will. We're going to definitely discuss, and probably where we'll start, the Dikembe Mutombo tweet that happened before the NBA draft. Kind of get into that with you a little bit. In case you've missed it, we will go into detail and kind of discuss why it's been a bit of a problem and why this maybe explains or confirms some people's suspicions about drafts and sports. Also, we'll mention a little bit of Larry Bird's discussion of the NBA needing to consider a four-point line. And coupling that with the Gary Payton discussion of Steph Curry as the MVP, maybe into an examination of why previous eras of sport aren't always the best. And Larry Bird addressed that somewhat indirectly, but he at least mentioned it. I think that's going to open up the avenue for this discussion. So let's jump right into that with what happened earlier this week in the NBA draft. And in case you're unfamiliar, or in case you don't follow, I am a big NBA fan, so here's what went on. NBA draft lottery happened this week. What that is the teams that are outside of the playoffs, depending on how close they were to making the playoffs or how good their record was, they have a certain percentage chance to win the number one pick in this upcoming draft coming up in June. So, you know, that happened. It was Thursday night. Dikembe Mutombo, formerly of the Philadelphia 76ers, also played on a few other teams, the Atlanta Hawks, the Houston Rockets, Chicago Bulls briefly for a little bit, was on the roster. Dikembe Mutombo, of course, being, you know, still a big figure in Philadelphia 76er history, basketball Hall of Famer, tweeted out about an hour before the NBA draft. He sends her, actually a few hours, excuse me, it was 1:36 Pacific time, which would make it 3:36 here, 4:36 Eastern, so about 3 hours before the draft and what the result would have happened. Dikembe Mutombo tweeted out a picture of he and Allen Iverson together, and it said, "Congrats to the Sixers on grabbing the number one spot in the NBA draft, hashtag Philla first, F or P-H-I-L-A, of course, Philla, abbreviation for Philadelphia. The reason that stirred people the wrong way and the reason it brought up a conversation which is, you know, has been back and forth in the history of the NBA draft lottery was because, well, lottery hadn't taken place yet. About 3-4 hours prior, as we noted. The reason that's a bad thing? Philadelphia got the number one pick, which no one knew, theoretically. So, Dikembe Mutombo sends out that tweet. Whoops-a-daisy. A couple hours later, we find out, oh, Philadelphia is in fact the recipient of the number one pick in the NBA draft for the first time since, I believe, 1996, when they drafted Allen Iverson first overall. So, you can kind of begin to put the pieces together and see, huh, that's not good. Did he know beforehand? What happened? What caused this to come about? or is the draft lottery fixed? Which isn't a new discussion. So, Dikembe Mutombo, he came out a little bit later. He tweeted that he was super psyched that the, and this is a quote from the LA Times, quote, super psyched that the Sixers had a 25% chance of landing the number one pick, better odds than any other team in the lottery. And he tweeted out as much. He said, quote, sorry guys, got excited about the Sixers' odds and got ahead of myself, still keeping my fingers crossed for tonight. Now, mind you, that tweet came out, it was the day after, it was a little bit later going on. So, you know, it's still sketchy. 76ers PR representative confirmed to Deadspin, if you're not a follower, Deadspin being a very snarky, perhaps, look at sports, a very not safe for work look at sports sometimes. Mutombo had no inside knowledge of a secret plan to reward the team with a fixed number one pick. Now, the 76ers sent a sly-looking emoji, according to the LA Times, Mutombo's way after they got that number one pick, and of course they deleted it. The Deadspin crew grabbed a picture of that tweet, so you know, you'll see how that goes. But the 76ers at some point did also say that they sent out emails to some of their famous former players to say, hey, if you would like to participate, and this has actually been provided. He received an email from the 76ers asking him to send out a congratulatory tweet if the team got the number one pick. And this is a quote from the LA Times. Quote, the email, which has since been provided to multiple media outlets, provided some pre-written tweets for the former player to choose from. Mutombo said he copied and pasted one of them onto his Twitter feed, then accidentally clicked the tweet button, which sent it out several hours before the draft took place. Unquote. He also added in a phone interview with the USA Today newspaper that, quote, I want to let people know that there was no conspiracy. So, yes, I'm willing to take maybe at face value, or somewhat at face value, the providing of emails with proper timestamps showing that there were emails sent out asking for that kind of tweet and that direct tweet to be sent makes me believe it a little bit. But, man, it does not look good. And this has been something since 1985, or maybe a little bit later. I will look up that number right now to be sure. Of course, you'd think I'd have that. The reason the draft lottery has taken on many different forms in terms of what, you know, is it rigged? Here's a way to avoid it appearing rigged. It's been a very troubling history for the NBA draft lottery. Now, mind you, 1985, it was the year. The Knicks landed in the number one pick in the NBA draft lottery with Patrick Ewing. He was going to be the number one pick no matter what. What happened at that time, which is how they established the draft lottery, was there was a more like a, you think like a bingo ball, you know, where they stir it and the ping pong balls you shuffle around. Think that, but on a larger scale with envelopes. And I say envelopes, like moderately sized envelopes. You know, think like 10 by 10 inches, something like that. So they put them in, David Stern rolls the tumbler, does all of that, pulls out an envelope, and it's the New York Knicks. Which at that time, of course, New York, Madison Square Garden, the most famous arena in the world, especially, you know, in wrestling and in basketball. You have the New York Knicks, which are one of the more popular, if not the most famous franchise in professional basketball, just due to their history, due to their location, of course. You know, you've seen the Lakers kind of take over some of that in the last number of years, but the Knicks are still a very famous, and at the time especially, a very famous franchise. They've been struggling. There was a lot of tanking in 1984, a lot of NBA teams trying to play very badly to get that number one pick. So they set up this lottery situation where, as I said, you put the envelopes in the tumbler and you kind of see how that goes. Of course, the Knicks are the one whose envelope gets drawn out. And some people, many people, I will correct that, continue to see and see if they can find ways to show that it was rigged. Some people allege that the envelope was frozen so that David Stern would know which envelope to grab based upon its temperature and its feel. Some people acknowledge that the corner of the envelope was bent, and they have video that shows as David Stern was tossing the envelopes into the tumbler, they threw the Knicks a little bit harder so it ricocheted off the corner, bent it perhaps, and allowed him to know which one to pick. Lots of different things going on with that. Lots of different logic going on with that. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. But the appearance in and of itself is enough to make people wonder. And wonder they did, wonder they continue to do, wonder they will forever do, just because that's how that works. It's a, you know, reading an article from Sports Illustrated. They released this a little while back because they did a big spread called 1985 the best year in sports. And of course, one of those big articles being on the fixed draft, quote unquote fixed. Was it fixed? I don't know. Maybe. It didn't look too great, to be honest with you. It still doesn't look that great. They, you know, of course, there are YouTube videos that show these kinds of things. They kind of want to allege that this fix took place with the bent envelope. And actually, we'll see if we can post a link to it, perhaps kind of show what happens, that the envelopes were tossed in one by one by one by one. And you can see just the way it was done. There was an envelope that was tossed by not David Stern. I'll correct that, by another NBA official, where he was just setting them in the bottom of the bowl one by one, you know, kind of forming a stack. And there was one that he threw over to the left hand, or to his right hand side, left if you're from the camera vantage point, to show that it kind of went off the bowl. It doesn't look like it did enough to really bend or do any damage, but there's enough there for people to become concerned. You know, it gets tossed in, the bowl rolls around, and of course, number one pick goes to the New York Knicks. That's got enough evidence there for people to think it was fixed. And here's the thing. I've mentioned this in a lot of times past. I want to be someone who believes that everything is clean and clear in sports. Now, we have evidence to the contrary sometimes when it comes to, like, FIFA having, you know, gambling scandals or, you know, betting scandals, conspiracy and collusion scandals. You see that in soccer. We've seen that in other sports. We saw that with Tim Donaghy, the official in the NBA, taking bets and saying, you know, he's still in prison for this kind of situation. And maybe it's naivety on my part wanting that to not be true. The evidence is there. It's unfortunate. We see enough of it to know that there is evidence showing that, and just plainly, not even just acknowledging this draft lottery thing, just looking to see that there are incidents in real life, in sports, where people have gambled upon their sport, have placed money in bets, and have changed the outcome of the sport. The 1919 Chicago White Sox, the Mark 7, the Black Sox, as they became because of that gambling scandal. Dikembe Mutombo didn't do anything but provide more ammunition, intentional or not. Now, in this case, less so than in times past, am I willing to say, okay, yeah, that's evidence that this was fixed. I do, maybe in a naive sense, think this was truly just someone copying. You know, Dikembe Mutombo's in his 50s. Yeah, people who are in that, you know, middle age, getting toward their elderly years, have more experience with technology than maybe in eras past. Of course, with Twitter and smartphones, it all becomes more prevalent. I'm still willing to think that it was an honest mistake. I work in IT. During my day job, unfortunately, you know, not fully in radio yet, I've seen enough firsthand experience to know that people who didn't grow up with the technology in their hands, like, you know, some of us who listen to the show, myself a bit, and of course, my nephews and nieces and younger students that are coming up, of course, they've had smartphones since they were, you know, little kids. I'm willing to believe there was an honest mistake made there, but man, it does not help any form of timing. And of course, the 76ers sending the winking, or, you know, that kind of the shifty look tweet afterward, probably not helping themselves. It's probably just someone in social media thinking, huh, let's have fun with this, it'll be kind of cute. Doesn't help the narrative at all. So, is it fixed? Man, I hope not. Was this one fixed? Man, I hope not. I think the league, in terms of just everyone hating the 76ers, they've won a minimal amount of games the last couple of years. It seems almost impossible as many games as they have lost in the course of the Sam Hinkie regime now being out of Philadelphia, which was their entire mindset: trade picks, trade players, bomb. Trade picks, trade players, bomb. Trade picks, trade players, tank. They've been doing that. I don't know if the league would necessarily want to reward them for that. And people have been complaining about the last few years that that's not the way you build a team. Now, before the draft lottery, that was the way you built a team. You tanked, you lost hard, and you got the number one pick because you were the worst team. The NBA saw a problem there, and they've made the change. Of course, the first one not being a good example of that change being a good thing, depending on if you believe the conspiracy or not. This one, I'm less willing to believe as something that was, you know, automatically fixed. I think the league has been so frustrated, especially Adam Silver, trying to set a new precedent, trying to, you know, bring a new look to the NBA. He's only been commissioner for a couple years. I think he would hope to not reward a team who's been doing that, but statistically a 25% chance, the 76ers had the best chance to get that pick. So it's not a situation where it's outside the realm of possibility. I personally think that it was fine. That's just me. I don't think there's a fix here. I don't think there's a conspiracy to be had. Just an unfortunate tweet. You know, we'll maybe see in years to come. No one's really ever admitted to the Ewing conspiracy, so I don't think that's necessarily ever going to happen in this case, if it were a conspiracy, but I hope not. Yeah, again, I'm naive maybe, but I just hope that sports are still something at least a little bit pure. Now, mind you, I'm a big fan of college sports, and I know that's not the case, but maybe just allow me to live in my ignorance, please, guys. This is PZ85 Sports, your Podzilla 1985 Network. I am Cody Sandusky. About 16 minutes in, as we said, an abbreviated episode of sorts. Just wanting to hit on a few key topics due to different situations. Glad to have you on board with us. Of course, if you hear any of these things, you have a thought, you have a question, you have a concern, definitely feel free to tweet me. I am at Cody Sandusky on Twitter. S-A-N-D-U-S-K-Y, all one word on Twitter. Definitely check back, definitely tweet back. You can, of course, email us at podzilla1985@gmail.com. I think I might actually settle in for an email address, so I'll get to Jesse on that. We'll have that for you next week as well. But definitely feel free if you have thoughts. If you do think the Ewing conspiracy is a thing, hit us up. Let me know what your thoughts are. And as we said, we'll try to have that link to the video of the Ewing draft so you can see what happened and why people allege so heavily that that was a fixed draft lottery. Sticking to the NBA, sticking to a player who was playing at that time when Ewing was drafted, Larry Bird, currently the Indiana Pacers president, formerly a coach, formerly, of course, a Hall of Famer with the Boston Celtics. We've talked about him just a couple weeks ago, maybe last week. We were talking about coaches being changed and why having, or 2 weeks ago, excuse me, because Dalton was with us last week. But 2 weeks ago, we talked about, you know, coaching changes happening so quickly in current day sports. Larry Bird being an advocate of that due to his own personal beliefs and his own personal actions. You know, I gave him credit for that, saying that he lived out his saying that 3 or 4 years is as much as a team will listen to a coach. He saw that when he was a player for the Celtics in the 80s, that changed over after a few years, and he lived it himself. So at least I can give him credit for believing it and practicing that belief with his team. Now, there's been a lot of changes in terms of the way the game is played in the NBA over the last 30, 40 years. Of course, the NBA added the three-point line in the 1979-1980 season. You know, a big change, a historic change to the game. 2015-2016, players hit 36.7% of their three-point shots, the most since the introduction of the three-point arc. That's bringing some older players or former players to question, and maybe even some current fans, whether or not there needs to be yet another line. Because you see in all of the footage, you see in all the fun things going on in the NBA in these last couple of years, like you have Steph Curry coming from 40 feet out, hitting a three-point shot, no problem. It's just, it seems to be the range players can shoot from. It's becoming astronomical. It's becoming more consistent. These aren't just fluke shots that, you know, someone steps up and you know, we use Steph Curry as the example because, of course, now the MVP of the league, and he's been setting a lot of these historic numbers with three-pointers. It's not like the kid's just throwing one-arm shots, just trying to slam it into the net and hope that something works. It's not, these aren't desperation shots. These are shots that are planned. They are strategic. And they work a lot of the time. So Larry Bird is kind of acknowledging, and here's a quote via the New Yorker. I'm reading it from The Score. Quote, we didn't gravitate to the three-point line at first. We weren't like, oh boy, here it is. No, it takes time. When they first put it in, some teams took 5 three-pointers a game, and that was a lot. This season, teams averaged more than 24 attempts, many of them being taken well beyond the arc. And, you know, Larry Bird went further on to add, quote, it's funny how the game has changed. My thinking about it, I was really worried back 16, 17 years ago, so about the turn of 2000, that the little guy didn't have a spot in the NBA anymore. It was just going to be big guards like Magic Johnson. And of course, coming a few years after that, LeBron James. But then players started shooting more threes and spacing the court, and everyone wants small guards now. My era, you always think that's the greatest era. But I'm not so sure anymore. And that's an interesting concept for someone who was very ardent, and of course has been a figure of basketball, will always be a figure of basketball, just because Larry Bird, one of the historic players of the 80s, of course had the big 1979 NCAA championship game battle with Magic Johnson, their first meetup, of course, a prelude to their multiple meetups in the NBA Finals during their careers, this is a guy who understands. He was a part of what many people say, the escalating era of basketball, the time that drew in national fans, the time that drew in the cable subscriptions and the cable deals and things that have brought the league to where it is now. The launching point by which you saw Jordan become what he was in the 90s, what you've seen LeBron and Kobe come in the 2000s, and where we're at now. For him to be willing to address as an old head, quote unquote, that the game is changing, the game is probably always going to be in some form of change, and that we need to consider it realistically and to consider it genuinely, is really impressive. It makes me like Larry Bird a little bit more. Yeah, he comes off as a little bit gruff sometimes. Yes, he's definitely not looking anything close to basketball shape these days, but he's willing to acknowledge that the game's changing and that sometimes we need to change with it. And sometimes the game just needs to have additional things done. And you know, I appreciate that he's willing to say that, because we see someone who played in maybe a different era and maybe a more recent era say something a bit different in terms of the game changing and what the merits of this game has. Hall of Famer Gary Payton played in the 90s through the mid-2000s. Of course, he won a championship with the Heat in 2006, tried with the Lakers in 2004, but a long-time Seattle Sonic. So, played in the 90s, played against Jordan, does all of that. Steph Curry, in case you missed it, was the first unanimous MVP selection in NBA history. There had never, up until this point, been a unanimous MVP selection. And there are merits to the discussion that whether or not Steph Curry is the MVP for most valuable player, or if he's simply the best player. Of course, LeBron James has brought that up. If you listen to any form of sports talk radio, you've heard a lot of people bring it up. Gary Payton, he was speaking with interviews with Sports Illustrated and SiriusXM, said that Larry Bird, Michael Jordan, Wilt Chamberlain, Bill Russell, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar were also worthy of the distinction, and said the Curry vote was, quote, about era. Quote, I think all of these guys were unanimous decisions too, said Payton. It just happened in an era where it went his way. I commend him and what he's accomplished, but you got to think about who was voting for MJ, Kareem in their time, why they wouldn't have given all their votes to those guys. If you look at LeBron, what he does for his team, he does everything. I still think he's the best all-around basketball player. As we say, Stephen Curry was the best player this year, but I'm saying all-around. Who gives you assists, who gives you rebounding, who gives you points, who does a lot of the things for his team to have it. If you take LeBron off that team, I don't think Cleveland is a good team like that. If you take Curry off of it, right now I don't know. They probably would win games. They wouldn't have won 73, but they would win a lot of basketball games. And Gary Payton continuing again, we forgot Wilt Chamberlain averaged 50 points and 30 rebounds. Maybe not a little outlandish. We'll go to his stats in a second. You didn't think he was a unanimous decision? Who else ever did that and scored 100 points in one game? And he didn't even win it in 1962. That's what I'm trying to say. You look at Michael Jordan. When they set the record of 72-10 in 96, he didn't get all those votes. So you're trying to tell me these reporters or whoever's voting that you and them guys back then, they didn't know that he was a unanimous decision. Don't blame that on Stephen Curry. Blame that on them reporters, unquote. Yeah, there's a bit of merit to say that the reporters that are covering the game now, and maybe those who are involved in voting now, are more willing to give that out. Now, mind you, we just had this discussion a little while back talking about the fact that for the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame voting, Ken Griffey Jr. did not receive 100% votes, and that was partially due to, you know, history, due to just the way voters vote. Of course, Babe Ruth didn't get in unanimously, so why should Ken Griffey Jr.? You know, these kind of historic things, you know, it's very difficult to kind of, it's, you know, I get where he's coming from. It's difficult for someone to set that precedent and see how it's going. It's really unfortunate that someone still holds that mindset, though, because I think there is some validity to state that, you know, somebody's got to break that record at some point, right? You would think so. Someone has to set that precedent. And, you know, maybe at this point it was Stephen Curry. By the way, 1961-62 for the Philadelphia Warriors. He was right. He averaged 50 points per game, an NBA record for a season. He only averaged 25.7 rebounds. Which, yes, I get, isn't that big of a difference. And mind you, the person who won the MVP that season was Bill Russell. You know, not a big problem in terms of who that was, but he didn't score 50 points or 20-something rebounds. So I definitely understand where that comes from. It's a little bit odd, given that Chamberlain led in both points and rebounds by a decent stretch. But at some point, things are inevitable. Things, you know, we don't have to always stick to the era or the way things were. And Gary Payton's kind of showing that. He shows that even if it's not the player, because he gave Steph credit, maybe in a backhanded sense, when he was talking about the fact LeBron's the best all-around player who gives you points, gives you assists, gives you all these things. And there's merit to it. I'm not going to say Gary Payton is incorrect in that analysis. What I am saying is that to kind of disrespect what is going on right now, blame it on reporters, and kind of just pass it off as, oh, that's what's happening right now. This guy doesn't get it because none of these other guys get it, is really short-sighted. And I said the same thing about Major League Baseball Hall of Fame voting. Somebody at some point, many of these young men, many of these men who have gone through and played the game, have deserved to be the unanimous vote. And unfortunately, some people are stubborn. Voters are stubborn. They don't want to see that happen because this XYZ player didn't get it, so this player does not deserve it either. How do you fix mistakes in the past? You're trying to do something about it now. Why not go ahead and just do that? Why not allow this vote to happen? Mind you, to kind of go back a little bit, for Bill Russell in his 1961-62 MVP season, he had 23.6 rebounds per game and 18.9 points per game. A lot of that could be attested to the fact that Wilt Chamberlain kind of rubbed people the wrong way sometimes, and Bill Russell didn't. Yes, Chamberlain deserved it. Yes, 50 points, never happened again, 50 points per game in a season. Yes, 25.7 rebounds. It'll never happen again. Yes, he deserved that MVP, and he should have gotten it unanimously. Love Bill Russell. That fact remains that Gary Payton's right about that analysis. But just because that happened doesn't mean that Steph Curry doesn't deserve to be the unanimous MVP now. Steph Curry wasn't playing this. Steph Curry had nothing to do with that vote happening the way it did. So why blame him or discredit what he's done to have that happen? Yeah, traditions are a thing. I don't think these are traditions that should stick around. And we see that, and thankfully for players like Larry Bird, there's an opposite side where tradition is a thing. Yes, tradition needs to be respected, but you also have to acknowledge that this isn't the same game being played. This isn't the same era of players or coaches or officials or reporters. This isn't the same things it was then. So to try to justify or to discredit something that happened now just because of the way things were is kind of ignorant. I really like Gary Payton, one of the best defensive players in NBA history, especially at the guard position. There's a reason he earned the moniker the Glove. But to just speak ill and to discredit the unanimous vote for Steph Curry. Now, mind you, again, if the merit was not necessarily for him, but for another player, that I can see if you're saying that this person deserved a unanimous vote. And maybe that discussion can be had. But to say that a unanimous vote essentially shouldn't happen because it didn't happen to the previous greats of the game is kind of ignorant. And that's why I'm thankful for this Larry Bird discussion coming out this week as well. Now, whether or not there should be a four-point line, I don't necessarily think so, per se. I think that may be a little drastic. Let's see how things continue to go. If this becomes, you know, a continuing trend in the game, you know, another 3 years or so, or we see more players do that, if we see the three-point percentage continue to climb, or it stays at this elevated rate, 36% or so, if we see more players come in like Steph Curry who can hit 35-foot shots with, you know, kind of aplomb, then just throw it up and it goes, and it's not, again, a desperation shot, it's a strategic, well-thought decision, then yes, maybe we need to consider adding a four-point arc to the game. But until we get to that point, let's not move rashly. And I don't think anyone's going to. You know, again, tradition kind of reigns in sports, especially in the professional sports that we have of hockey, baseball, basketball, football. So I don't think that kind of change will happen next season or anything like that. They're already battling enough in terms of whether they will have patches for advertising on jerseys in the coming seasons, which the 76ers signed a deal with StubHub to be the first to have that agreement arranged. So I don't think it's coming quickly, but being willing to consider it is different than voting it in. Being willing to be open-minded and see it happen is different than just pushing it through. And I think that willingness to see a change in a sport, to adapt a sport to the current era of players or to the current style, is good. Be flexible. Be a little bit free-thinking sometimes. Not saying we change things for the sake of change, because we've seen some of that in sports. I'm not the biggest fan of all of those changes. good, bad, or indifferent because it's dangerous. I kind of miss the excitement of a kickoff return that we've seen in football. It's not much the case anymore because the rules have been changed. And mind you, I get that's for safety. I'm not decrying. I'm saying that I miss that. That change, yeah, I understand why it happened, but it kind of sucks that it did. You've seen some changes in baseball. Of course, they have the clocks trying to make sure that pitchers are at the mound and throwing their pitches within a proper time frame to not delay the game. There's good to be had in that. I agree. Being able to keep a game that some find very boring, unfortunately, being condensed or not taking as much time needlessly, that's a good thing. Being willing to change is good. Changing for the sake of change is not so good, but being willing to seek out and being willing to adapt is a positive. So I commend Larry Bird and some of the NBA officials who may look toward that as good. Gary Payton, nothing against him. Tradition isn't always where you need to be hung up. Just because something happened in the past doesn't mean you need to continue that precedent into the present and future. That's not good in any part of life. Most parts of life, we'll say that. But we've hit that 32-minute mark or so here on Podzilla 1985 Sports. I guess 31:15. We'll be getting close to 32 in a moment. Said we'd be keeping it short this time around, and these are topics we can continue to discuss into next week and the future. Again, if you have thoughts, feel free to email us, podzilla1985@gmail.com. We will have an email account for you for the sports show in the near future. If you have thoughts on Twitter, you can tweet me at Cody Sandusky, CodySandusky, all one word. I love to hear your thoughts and would love to talk to you about whatever you have in concerning sports. If you have topics you would like to hear discussed on the network, let me know and we'll see if we can incorporate those into a future show. But of course, as we do every week, make sure you like Podzilla 1985 on Facebook. Follow whomever you can, including at Cody Sandusky on Twitter. Go to Podzilla1985.com. Check out our other podcasts. We had the preview for Extreme Rules this week on PWU with our guest, Big Johnny. Thursday, of course, Tanner Thursday, talking about the new Ghostbusters trailer, Nerd Up, talking about some more of the Pokemon Sun and Moon. And, of course, new episode coming up Monday. We'll talk about Ghostbusters and probably some more Pokemon. Mr. 100 Five-Star Man, great episode this week for those two as well. Lots of fun to be had on the PZ85 Network, so check it all out. Buy the t-shirts or memorabilia or items at redbubble.com. Search Podzilla 1985. Check out some of that stuff. We have a Podzilla 1985 sports shirt you can buy. It comes standard in the baseball tee. Looks very cool. I recommend checking out. Support us on Patreon. Patreon.com. Search Podzilla 1985. Allow us the opportunity, if you back us, you give us the opportunity to continue present to you this great content, maybe sometimes in a more consistent manner. So we appreciate your assistance with that. But until then, I am Cody Sandusky saying thank you for tuning in to Podzilla 1985 Sports, the abbreviated edition. Tune in next week for more, and we'll talk to you soon, guys. Stay safe, stay warm, enjoy some sports in your life. See you soon.